This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Well, it looks like baseball is on its way back, right? I want to talk about all issues baseball related with a friend of the show that we haven't talked to in a while. Dan Hayes does a great job covering baseball. He's done it for a long time. You can now read his work on The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter at DanHayesMLB, which it does make me wonder if Van Scallen did his Twitter profile. I do wonder about that because there's a lot in there that I don't know that Dan is all about, which I'll go through with him in a minute. He joins me on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford Melrose Park. You can find 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from at AlpamonteFord.com. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Lawrence, how's it going?
Things are good. So wait, are you actually an Uber driver enthusiast? Is that a thing?
I was an Uber driver for about 2 months, and I really did have a 5-star rating, perfect all the way. I won. One couple was very gracious to not ding me for some early morning crazy, like not realizing I was in the wrong lane kind of driving. But aside from that, yes, I was a Uber driver for 2 months and totally perfect 5 stars.
So what was your vibe? Like, if I'm getting into your Uber, what's the vibe that I'm getting in a Dan Hayes Uber?
I asked, come on, I'm a reporter, man. This is all we do is talk. So, like, that was when I was in between jobs. I just kept my interview skills fresh. So basically I'd ask people questions. And if they didn't want to talk, I quickly figured that out and shut up. But anybody that wanted to talk, you got a interview basically over the course of your ride.
Did you have any crazy Uber moments?
Oh, man. Yes. Because this was like right around Christmas time. So imagine driving in downtown and getting people who are at their conferences and they leave their conferences at noon and they're hanging out and it's 3 o'clock already and hammered. Yes, I had a couple, nothing out there insane. But definitely drunk people during the middle of the day, which was always entertaining. Like, I always had a smile afterwards, as long as everybody was cool, which, you know, I mean, we're talking about 200-something rides, so I didn't have anything go bad, and I did not drive late at night, so I never had a throw-up in the car, which was the goal of not driving late at night.
I mean, that's a good goal to have, no doubt about it. Well, now I know, because at first I'm sitting there going, I feel like you've been tampered with here in your Twitter bio. And I just wanted to make sure that the things that were there for a legitimate reason.
Yeah.
And now seeing that you actually drove an Uber, I'm kind of excited about that for you. That's very, very cool. Let's talk baseball. How do you view what's happened in this negotiating process over the last 2 months?
Well, I mean, there's no question it's been ugly. But I also think it's been necessary. And I think the players accomplished what they set out to do. And I know it's terrible against the backdrop of everything that's gone on. But we know how broken the system is. We've seen the system rigged with Eloy Jimenez, where he got his contract, and so he got to come up. But the White Sox could have manipulated his time. Chris Bryant, we saw his time, his service time manipulated. There are so many flaws in this system that have been going against the players for years that they had to take a hardline stance. And that last CBA in 2016 really hurt them even more than they were already being dinged. And so they needed to be in this position, I think, where they didn't give in. The owners have had their way for a couple of years now, and they've always had their way because the books aren't open. It's not like there's a profit sharing. Obviously, players do very well for themselves, but the owners have always been doing better. And so what sucks about it is when you have owners coming out like Bill DeWitt saying that it's not very profitable. And all you have to do is do some research and see that he bought his team for $150 million in 1995. And if he sold it right now, it'd be worth $2.1 billion, something along that line. And I guarantee you the St. Louis Cardinals would go for more than $2.1 billion. So, you have the sentiment going back and forth, and you have people getting upset at players. Honestly, players, they deserve to some of it because they were so hardline, but at the same time, they've been so far behind the ball that I think that it was necessary. This is a critical time with another CBA coming up after the 2021 season to get more back on even playing ground. And for owners to want to socialize losses when they don't share the profits, you know, it's unacceptable in that regard. And so I get why people would be upset because, look, there's all these people out of work. It would have been great to have baseball going all along. But it was necessary. That's how I kind of view it.
Is it wrong for me to, because you would know better than I, you're around this every day. I look at the leadership on both the player side and MLB side, with Rob Manfred and Tony Clark, and go, both sides could be better. Is that fair?
And it could be for sure, because if it was better on both sides, we wouldn't have had the leaks. And if MLB had done this right, they would have just played up health concerns from the start, which is very legitimate, as we see the Phillies now with, what, five players and seven people overall, or maybe it's eight. They had a couple more positive tests today. MLB should have been playing that up all along. There should have been no leaks about the negotiations. Instead, both sides decided to try and play the public game, and it really backfired. It was ugly. I think it's turned a lot of fans off to baseball. People, frankly, don't want to see it. Some, the casual fan doesn't want to see it. I think the diehards definitely do. But absolutely. There should not have been leaks whatsoever. There should not have been this trading back and forth publicly of letters to each side, and it got so ugly. All they had to do was focus on health and say, look, we're not sure this is going to happen. Look what's going on in the country, and keep the money out of it. And I think it would have been a lot less ugly. I do think that the MLB players got better leadership. They added to their negotiating team. And so in that regard, I think the player, they took a bath in 2016 with that last CBA. So from their point of view, I think they got better. They got stronger as a group. And the fact that they didn't cave, and, you look at the owner's first three offers, and it was the same offer dressed up in a different way. It was the same percentage of money each time. Players didn't cave at all. And finally, the owners made a concession on their fourth offer. And we saw the ball moved a little bit, but it still didn't result in anything different. So, yes, this entire mess could have been handled much differently. And it was so ugly. And, it's been a bad 5-6 weeks, whatever it's been for baseball.
Dan Hayes of The Athletic joining us here on The Score. Follow him on Twitter at Dan Hayes MLB. Why do you think there were delays in the face-to-face negotiations?
I think they knew that it was going to be only a partial season anyways. Once they agreed to prorated, the owners probably had a certain amount that they could afford to give out. And so we knew that it was going to be somewhere in that 60 to 80 game range, even though the players were asking for 114 games. That was kind of pie in the sky. And I think that everybody probably knew that it was going to be in this range, and that's why they waited for a while, because there was nothing to be done. I mean, we know that they had to let the country clear out, and the first wave, which never really ended, especially as we're seeing it blow up in 21 states, that was always going to be a factor no matter what. So I think baseball had to wait no matter what, and then the money part, you know, the fact that there's no fans in the stands, it is a real problem. It is a real issue when you have teams that draw significant amounts of revenue because people come and fill their ballparks. I mean, you think about the Cubs and what their average attendance is and what that does to your owner's profits to not have somebody coming in and paying for those expensive beers and those $15, you know, sandwiches and everything that's there. It really does hurt. There's no question that what the owners were saying about this being a year where they're going to lose is true. But at the same time, you know, I mean, we're still talking about a sport that's highly profitable over the time. And so it's just, it's been a mess. The only real good thing personally that's come out of this is, you know, I've lived here for 8 years in Chicago. This is the first time I've seen the spring change into summer. And it's been nice to actually be around for the weather. But, aside from that, man, what a mess these last couple months have been.
What are the concerns that the players that you talk to have about restarting spring training?
Well, I mean, I think everybody is highly aware of coronavirus. I mean, we're looking at a 60-game season if the conditions allow. And I don't necessarily think players are really worried about, you know, they're generally healthy people and in great shape. I think they're more concerned about bringing it home to their family. I think they're more concerned about the staff. You know, there's a lot of people on these staffs that aren't in the same shape as ball players. And there's a lot of people around support staff to get players ready. You know, I think you look at it and there's a lot of people who you come in contact with. And so just general health concerns. And again, I mean, you know, when this started back in, you know, when the word was leaking out and teams were starting to not sign autographs in person, they would sign a ball and hand it off to fans, that kind of stuff. Players weren't really concerned for their own well-being. I think it's more for everyone around them. And so I still think that's very true. I mean, there's just so much, there's no perfect bubble to live in. And so at some point, somebody's going to be exposed and there's going to be a start-stop factor and how is it going to affect everyone? And, you know, I think that's why we'll see expanded rosters so that potentially you can take out an entire swath of a team, like five guys, if that happens, and replace them. But, you know, I think everything's out the window when it comes to this and everything is up in the air, essentially.
How much do you think it would take? Like, what's a threshold of a team bowing out if there is an outbreak? Like, do you think that we've gotten to a place in baseball and I guess nationally where that isn't a concern?
Well, no, I mean, look, we saw the Orlando Pride team yesterday announce that they were dropping out of their season. And it was because a handful of players. Now you're talking about 60 players for baseball. And so you have a lot of numbers and when you only need 26 for the, and maybe it's 28 for the first part of it. Obviously there's details to be ironed out, but you can, if you have a second team on the side waiting, you can hypothetically replace, and there's going to be probably a lot of pressure to move forward. It's really going to be interesting though. I don't know on thresholds and I'm glad that it's something that I'm not figuring out. But it sounds like those are details that they are working out and, you know, I mean, that one part has been taken care of for a while. I'm sure it's been ever adjusting, but I know the health side of this has been a significant part of all of it. And that's the one part that baseball and the MLBPA have seemed to have been on the same page for most of the time. I mean, I'm sure there's been concerns from both sides all along, but it also seems like the two sides have been kind of working together on that, knowing how critical that aspect of all this is.
What do you think the two sides have learned about this leading into what happens after the 2021 season? Is there anything positive that we can expect, or can we expect an all-out labor war between these two sides in a year and a half?
Well, I think we will have an all-out labor war. I think if there's anything we've learned, it's that the players are not going to bend. And I think ownership probably needed to see that. You know, like I said, there's new negotiation team in there, and they are much more hardline on the MLBPA side, which, frankly, they have to be. I mean, the service time stuff, especially when we're seeing free agents, you know, the average age of, or the average careers are getting shortened, the average age of free agents, you know, the guys that are hitting it when they're 30, 31 are being forgotten about or not getting the contracts they used to. And baseball is skewing towards younger players. So you think about the service time and how much that affects it. Every player is basically for six. There's a way to get them for 6+ years, and that's got to change. And I think that the MLBPA realizes how far behind they are, and they've caught up. And showing this at this point was probably great for their side because owners know they're not going to be able to push around the players in the future. I still think that sets up for a terrible, terrible 2021, end of 2021 scenario. And it could get ugly, and it wouldn't shock me if there was some kind of strike or lockout at the end before that 2022 season starts, unless people realize that they got to concede, you know, and hopefully this showed both sides that they're going to have to make concessions. But look, the players made concessions right away in this by going with the prorated salaries and saying, look, if we're only playing 80 games, then we won't take our entire 100%. We'll take 50% of our salaries. Players started off by putting the olive branch out there. I thought the players made more concessions along the way, all along, and owners were just kind of, you know, sticking to it until they realized that the players weren't going to give in on the areas where they wanted to stick to.
I ask questions sometimes that I don't know the answer to, and it can be a dangerous proposition, but you're a responsible person, and I'm just curious, covering a team in Minneapolis, considering we've seen the death of George Floyd, we have seen a reckoning when it comes to the statue of the old owner of the Twins, what's the last month been like for you?
Oh, man, I mean, so I have been in Chicago the whole time, so I haven't been there. But you can't help but be affected, and it's been a roller coaster. I mean, we've seen some great progress come from this, and I actually applaud. I don't usually applaud teams. I applaud the Twins for what they have done because their ownership was one of the first to come out and like $25 million commitment towards fighting for racial justice. There's been some, you know, we saw that there was no public pressure whatsoever on the Calvin Griffith statue. I mean, we're talking about a petition with 230 signatures on it was out there, and that's it. And the team said, I mean, you think about it, nobody on the team that I talked to even was aware of the comments that he made in 1978 as to why he moved to Minneapolis. And you know, there were so many, like, it's been plus as far as what the Twins have done. But, you know, obviously there's a lot of ground to cover here. And they've started to make a dent, but it's been a lot. It's been crazy to kind of see from afar too. And it seems like things have turned for the positive. There's a lot of good things going on in Minneapolis as a result, but it really never should have been here. We never should have been here in the first place. This should never have been an issue in the first place. So, you know, it sucks that it took what it's taken to get here. I'm just glad to see it's going the way it is.
Before I let you go, I wanted to ask you this. How in the world are you going to go about covering baseball now? Because because seriously, like, I imagine that access is going to be almost nil, as it should be. So how do you go about doing this job that you've done so well for so long?
Yeah, I know. It's especially with what we do at The Athletic, you know, it's always revolved around a lot of one-on-ones. I'm guessing it's going to take reaching out to people, their agents, to reaching out to coaches on the phone, because the talk is a lot of Zoom interviews, even though we're in the same ballpark, you know, to do post games that way right now. Fortunately, we don't do a whole lot of game-to-game coverage. It's more trends, that kind of stuff, and it's just going to take a lot of willingness on the part of the players. I do think MLB recognizes it's going to need some good press over the next couple months, given the bad couple of months of press. And so I would imagine there's a lot of effort on that part, but it will be a challenge without question. to not be able to see people face to face and look them in the eye and know what they're really feeling about situations and, you know, get a good read for it.
Dan, thanks so much for the time. It was really wonderful catching up, man. Thank you so much for being available.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for letting me relive my Uber days, my days as a Uber driver extraordinaire.
I feel like there's a whole podcast in there, man. Like, that should be a thing.
Hey, I did one with Randy Dobnak, who is the twin starter for Game 2 of the AL's DS, who also was an Uber driver. So last year when we had some fun with that, it definitely we had some similarities in our stories of drunken riders.
That is outstanding, man. Dan, this was great. Thanks a lot, man. Keep doing great work.
All right. Hey, thanks, Lawrence. I appreciate the time.
That's Dan Hayes of The Athletic. Herbie, you drove Uber, right? Or were you driving Lyft? I can't remember.
I did both.
Have you done, like, I feel like this is something that you should also explore. Like, you should talk with the people about these things.
Yeah, when I left the score, what is it, May of 2015 until I left for San Diego in January of 2016, I drove Lyft and Uber. And so, yeah, it was a good time. I actually enjoy driving, the art of driving. And Julio Rosario, I think, still drives Lyft or Uber right now,
yep,
too.
Still a Lyft driver. And Lawrence, off the air, I've got some unique stories about my times as a Lyft driver and an Uber driver. I'm sure drivers across the city have the same type of stories.
Oh, really? See, I feel like I should just kind of tie you guys into doing a House of L where we just talk about your Uber experience. I think we could do something cool with that. I'm going to talk some footy. Yeah. Not the Rex Ryan type. I mean actual soccer. That's coming up next here on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.